So this class will cover Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, 1st Chapter, verses 13 to 26. Verse 13. Achai Vodarita Purva Mitihasa Sarashina Pritya Mahakata Rajan Vichite Javta Shatrave. Formerly, O King, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial, even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave a vivid example. So last few verses, we heard how the Lord is not partial, but he favors the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is the way out. His purpose of creation is to get everyone out and back to Godhead. So there must be a way out.
The airport.
Go to the airport. So the airport is the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness is the way out. That's why he favors the mode of goodness. If you want to get out and make of this material world, you put yourself in the mode of goodness. And then you have a chance to go back to Godhead. You have more of a chance. You see, when you're out preaching, when you sell, you're trying to distribute a book to somebody, who is the person who will be most likely to take a book? Is someone who is maybe a vegetarian, or he's more in the mode of goodness. He'll give a donation. He'll say, yes, I'm interested in the soul and interested in yoga. And so that is, we can see that you have more of a chance from the mode of goodness. And right from the beginning of Bhagavatam, first canto, it said that the Vishnu, he favors the demigods and those who are, he comes here just for those in the mode of goodness. To reclaim those in the mode of goodness, isn't it?
Yes.
Which verse is that?
The last verse of the second chapter.
Last verse of second chapter?
1 to 31.
The Lord comes here just to reclaim those in the mode of goodness. So therefore, time is under the Lord, and that's why time favors goodness, because time is moving according to the Lord's plan of getting everyone to go back to Godhead, the purpose of creation. So when we put ourselves in the mode of goodness, then we're acting according to the purpose of the creation and the purpose of the Lord. We're acting according to the Lord's desire. We're more in line to the Lord's desire when we're in the mode of goodness. So in the first 12 verses, he's answered the question of Parikshit Maharaj about the Lord's biased behavior. And in the next verse, this verse we just read, Shukadev will now tell a story to illustrate how the Supreme Lord is always impartial. So previously, Narada has given an example to Yudhisthira Maharaj in the Rajasuya sacrifice. How is Shishupala so envious? How did he attain the position of liberation? So that is what Maharaj Yudhisthira will ask now in verses 14 and 15. O King, at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Maharaj Yudhisthira, son of Maharaj Pandu, personally saw Shishupala merge into the body of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, struck with wonder, he inquired about the reason for this from the great sage Narada, who was seated there. While he inquired, all the sages present also heard him ask this question. Verse 16. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, "It is very wonderful that the demon Shishupala merged into the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though extremely envious. This Sayujya Mukti is impossible to attain even for great transcendentalists. How then did the enemy of the Lord attain it?" So, now, let us make a comparison. We have a question here by Maharaj Yudhisthira. We had a question in the beginning of this chapter by Maharaj Parikshit. What is there's some very striking point in the difference between, they're about the same thing, but there's a different angle in these two different questions. Does anybody remember, what did Maharaj Parikshit ask? Yes?
He asked Shukadeva Goswami to relieve him from the doubts about neutrality and equality of God.
Okay, something,
to everybody.
Something more, yeah?
Maharaj Parikshit's wondering why Vishnu apparently sided with
yes.
the demigods.
Yes. Why did he take the side of the demigods?
Whereas here,
here
the demons are sided.
He's saying, why is he favoring the demons? First prediction is saying, why did he favor the demigods? And now Yudhisthira is saying, how come he's so much favoring the demons? So see, different angles of the question. And so just the question itself proves something, that the Lord is impartial. Just how the nature of his question. Now Pariksit is he was expecting, yes, the Lord is partial to the demigods. But here, Yudhisthira, you know, I'm really surprised. This he's a demon, he's blaspheming, and he got Suyuja Mukti. This is quite surprising. Quite surprising. So there's a verse in from Bhagavatam, 11.6.47, which is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's about those who achieve this Brahmaloka merging. Munayo vatavasana shamana vatva mantina pramakyam dhamate yanti shanta sanyasino malaha. 11.6.47. Naked saints and sannyasis who undergo severe physical penances, who can raise the semen to the brain, and who are completely equipoised in Brahman, can live in the realm known as Brahmaloka. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is Adi Lila 2.17, that this vata-vasana refers to mendicants who don't care about anything material, including clothing, but who depend wholly on nature. Such sages do not cover their bodies, even in severe winter or scorching sunshine. They take great pains not to avoid any kind of bodily suffering, and they live by begging from door to door. One time I was at Govardhan, I saw one yogi. He was sitting and he was in the summer, very hot summer, surrounded by five or six fires. So this is one tapasya. In the summer you go under the hot sun, and you surround yourself with fire and you meditate. I was amazing. So I'm sitting on the side of Govardhan doing this tapasya. And I also heard like one of our devotees, when he was, before he became a devotee, he was meditating in the snows of Russia in the wintertime, at the age of 17. He was doing this meditation. And so these things happen. They're still going on these days. So, and this is the kind of tapasya it requires to get Brahman realization. And so Prabhupada says, by practicing austerities under strict discipline, such mendicants attain a neutral state transcendental to the modes of nature and merge into the impersonal Brahman. Of course, we think this is hell. To merge is hellish. Because it's the only place in the material world where you can't do, of course it's in the spiritual world, where you can't do service to Krishna. In the material and spiritual world, one place, and that's the Brahman. So, but anyway, still these yogis, what's that? There's a verse in Brahma Samhita. It says, Pantastu koti shadavatsara sampradam yavayoratapi manasam nipungamanam sapyasti apabhadasin savichintaratve govindamati purisham. That the yogis, they meditate for millions of years and they travel, they can travel at the speed of the mind for millions of years and still they cannot touch the tip of the toe of Govinda's lotus feet. But Shishupala, he went to Brahman at least, even though he was a demon. So when Shishupala was born, he had four arms and three eyes. And what? And he brayed like a donkey. He brayed like a donkey. So it was foretold that Shishupala, if he would sit in the lap of his future killer, his extra eye and arms would disappear. So he had four arms and three eyes. So he sat and his mother was putting him in so many people's laps and she wanted to find out who's going to kill my son. Poor mother. So then he sat in Krishna's lap. And his extra arms and his eye disappeared. So his mother begged Krishna, don't kill my son, please. And Krishna said, okay, only if he speaks more than 99 criticisms of me, then I'll kill him. And so at the Rajasuya sacrifice, he went over the top. And he spoke 100 criticisms, and that was it. Krishna killed him. So, and in the Rajasiya sacrifice, they were worshipping Krishna as the most qualified person, and he waited till after the worship, and then he started blaspheming because he wanted to spoil the sacrifice by proving that you gave it to the unqualified person. So he let it go on, and then he says he's not qualified, so your whole sacrifice is invalidated. So that's what he was trying to do. But at the same time, every criticism of Krishna by Shishupala had a double meaning by the grace of Mother Saraswati. So it was also praise. We'll find this many times in Bhagavatam. Somebody criticizes Krishna or his devotees, but there's a double meaning. So let's go on. Verse 16, did we read that? Yes, verse 17. O great sage, we are all eager to know the cause for this mercy of the Lord. So now the Lord is merciful to the demons. I have heard that formerly a king named Vena blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that all the brahmanas consequently obliged him to go to hell. Shishupala should have also been sent to hell. How then did he merge into the Lord's existence? Verse 18, from the very beginning of his childhood, when he could not even speak properly, Shishupala, the most sinful son of Dhammagosha, began blaspheming the Lord, and he continued to be envious of Sri Krishna until death. Similarly, his brother, Dantavakra, continued the same habits. Although these two men, Shishupala and Dantavakra, repeatedly blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, Krishna, in case you don't know, Lord Vishnu is Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, they were quite healthy. Indeed, their tongues were not attacked by white leprosy, nor did they enter the darkest region of hellish life. We are certainly most surprised by this. So that is the reaction for blaspheming the Lord. If you blaspheme the Lord, you will get white leprosy or go to hell, or both. 20. How is it possible for Shishupala and Dantavakra, in the presence of many exalted persons, to enter very easily into the body of Krishna, whose nature is difficult to attain? So this question recently on the internet, there was a question which Adipurush Prabhu answered. And the question was that here Yudhisthira is asking about Shishupala and Dantavakra. But if you look at the Leela of Krishna, Dantavakra wasn't killed yet. So how did he know about Dantavakra? How did he know? He said Shishupala and Dantavakra in the presence of were killed, they attained the body of Krishna. So what was your answer, Adi Purush, to that question?
It wasn't mine.
I know.
Vishanchapura Dakra says that Narada Mukad Shukla, he heard it from the mouth of Narada.
Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that he heard it, a prediction from the mouth of Narada. And that's why he includes Dantavakra in this. And then somebody else on the internet was Vashishta, brought up another quote about the gopis.
Arishtashura,
yeah. The gopis in their songs of separation, they mentioned Arishtashura. And they also heard the predictions of Gargamuni at the birth of Krishna, and somebody else, and other sages' predictions. So that's why he could say that also Dantavakra, not simply Shishupala. Purport: Shishupala and Dantavakra were formerly Jai and Vijay, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha. Merging into the body of Krishna was not their final destination. For some time they remained merged, and later they received the liberations of Sarupya and Salokya, living on the same planet as the Lord in the same bodily form. The Shastras give evidence that if one blasphemes the Supreme Lord, his punishment is to remain in hellish life for many millions of years more than one suffers by killing many Brahmins. Shishupala, however, instead of entering hellish life, immediately and very easily received Sayuja Mukti. That such a privilege had been offered to Shishupala was not merely a story. Everyone saw it happen. There is no scarcity of evidence. How did it happen? Maharaj Yudhisthira was very surprised. And this was also mentioned by Uddhava when he was speaking to Vidura, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, verse 19. Dishta bhavadabir nanurajasuye chaidyasya krishnam dishata pisidhi yam yoginasam spihayanti samyak yogena kastad viraham sahita. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupala, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogis aspire after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices. Who can tolerate separation from him? So Krishna was merciful even to his enemy, who is a rival, always criticizing him. He insulted Krishna, and everyone saw him merge into the Lord's body. And this is a perfection most desired by gyanis and yogis, and they do all these austerities just to get this perfection. So Prabhupada says that, why did the Lord fight with Shishupala? Because the fighting spirit is there. That Krishna, he wants to fight. In Vaikuntha, there's no one for him to fight with. So therefore, some of his devotees have to come for him to fight. So he wanted to exhibit his fighting spirit. And so therefore, these two devotees came here. And there was a fight. And so that was the reason why they came. Verse 21. This matter is undoubtedly very wonderful. Indeed, my intelligence has become disturbed, just as a flame of a candle is disturbed by a blowing wind. O Narada Muni, you know everything. Kindly let me know the cause of this wonderful event. Shishukadeva Goswami said, after hearing the request of Maharaj Yudhisthira, Narada Muni, the most powerful spiritual master who knew everything, was very pleased. Thus, he replied in the presence of everyone taking part in the yajna. Verse 23. The great sage Shinaraji said, O king, blasphemy and praise, chastisement and respect are experienced because of ignorance. So remember the reply of Shukadev to Parikshit. He was giving so many evidences. It's the modes of nature, it's time, all these things are causing. Now he's saying it's ignorance. It's our own ignorance which is causing these reactions, these different things. The body of the conditioned soul is planned by the Lord for suffering in the material world through the agency of the external energy. So it's the external energy, of course. There, it is a cause, but mainly our dualities are due to ignorance. And so because of our ignorance, we get this body which is meant for suffering. Of course, we think differently, especially when you're young. We think, my son thinks, oh, this is really nice. Now I'm young, I can enjoy. This is, we think the body is meant for enjoying. What do you mean it's meant for suffering? You ask anybody, you ask old people even in America, they think, no, we're having a good time now. We're retired. We're not working anymore. Well, what good time can you have? Your teeth are, as they say, your teeth are falling out, this, that. So it's not working. It's not, the body. Every day when you're old, when you go through old age, which we are presently going through, you wake up in the morning and you have a pain somewhere in your body, and that pain goes away. The next morning it moves to a different place. So you say, okay, well, at least it's not in my foot anymore. So it's just, that's the way it goes. Now it's in my head, now it's in my hand, now it's this, now it doesn't stop. Whereas previously you could always do something about it. You know, when you were younger, or you even ignore it, you can ignore it when you're younger. But when you're old, you have to do some yoga or something just to prevent your body from deteriorating, which is nature's course in old age. It just deteriorates. Just like, I mean, there's dwindling and death, the six changes of the body. So dwindling is very, very painful. After the quote, we'll read the purport about five lines down. Actually, the suffering of being blasphemed and enjoyment of being praised, the acceptance of a good welcome or of chastisement by harsh words, are felt in the material conception of life. But since the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not material, but Satchidananda Vigraha, he is unaffected by insults or greetings, blasphemy or prayers. Being always unaffected and complete, he does not feel extra pleasure when offered nice prayers by the devotee, although the devotee benefits by offering prayers to the Lord. Indeed, the Lord is very kind to his so-called enemy, because one who always thinks of the personality of Godhead as an enemy also benefits, although he thinks of the Lord adversely. If a conditioned soul thinking of the Lord as an enemy or friend somehow or other becomes attached to the Lord, he receives great benefit. So when somebody chastises you, how do you feel? What thoughts go through your mind if you're not being Krishna conscious? Yeah.
Usually there's a tendency to find fault with the person that's chastising.
Yes, yes. You want to retaliate. You think, oh, he doesn't understand. Or he's this, he's that. He's prejudiced. Or he's got his own agenda. Or this is what we feel when somebody chastises it. And if somebody praises us, yes. Intelligent, very intelligent person. He has very good perception. Yes, finally, after all these years of chastisement, somebody understands me. Anyway, but Krishna is not like that. He doesn't, because we have this subtle body. The subtle body is the body that experiences these things. Gross body is not feeling the praise and the blame, but the subtle body, the mind, the false ego is feeling. So how does a devotee see? Devotee's chastised. Yeah. Tateyu kampam sa samikshamano. Yes, jamashtami?
I was going to say the same thing. And then he sees the chastiser simply as an instrument of the Lord.
Right. Chastiser is instrument of the Lord.
The Lord reciprocating with us to purify us, but also by giving us these reactions that help us reform. Based upon our past misdeeds and sinful tendencies.
Right. Okay, so the devotee sees that because of our past sins, now the Lord is acting as an instrument of our chastisement. Right, he's not upset. He sees Krishna's trying to rectify me. He's trying to bring me closer to him. He's trying to bring me closer. So he's not upset. Verse 24. My dear King, the conditioned soul, being in the bodily conception of life, considers his body to be his self and considers everything in relationship with the body to be his. Because he has this wrong conception of life, he is subjected to dualities like praise and chastisement. So now we're seeing what kind of ignorance, what is the nature of the ignorance that causes the dualities. And it's two words, aham, mameti. So aham refers, there's two classes of people who have this kind of conception. Of course, all of us have this kind of conception. But there's two basic categories which Shukadev Goswami has explained in the 9th chapter of 2nd Canto. I think it was Shukadev Goswami. Two basic categories. One is the aham category and one is the mama. Mama, everything is mine. And one category is I am the controller. So he classifies those two conceptions as the aham is the jnani and the mama is the karmi. So in the purport of that 292, second canto, chapter 9, verse 2, the verse is that the illusion living entity appears in so many forms offered by the external energy of the Lord. While enjoying in the modes of material nature, the encaged living entity misconceives, thinking in terms of, I am mine. So two conceptions. And Prabhupada says, due to the karmi thinks of this world as mine. And the jnani thinks, I am everything. So there's two different conceptions. The whole material conception of politics, sociology, philanthropy, altruism conceived by the conditioned souls is on the basis of this misconceived I and mine, which are products of a strong desire to enjoy material life. So this I and mine. So friends and enemies, they are reactions to our behavior in our previous life and also in this life. And they're a product of how we view the world in our I and mine conception. This is my enemy. This is my friend, according to how they relate to our bodies. So for the devotee, there is no enemy. Why is that? Just like we had an exercise at the Japa retreat, and Parijan was asking us to say, who is your worst enemy, who is your best friend? I mean, remember, try to remember your worst enemy, your best friend. And so, but some of, for some devotees, it was a problem because they didn't see anybody. Is there any? Huh? We don't keep grudges, yes. And so why not? Why does the devotee have no enemy? He acts in relationship with Krishna. Okay, Jamashtami? Yes, modes of nature. So devotee, as you were saying before, he sees everyone as an instrument of Krishna. Whoever relates with him, he's being Krishna's instrument to bring us to learn some lesson, bring us to a certain point of surrender, to give us some understanding. Actually, there was one... I went shopping across the street from the temple, and there was one of those wallas over there, and he was just, you could see Krishna speaking through him. I went over there to buy some oil for my deities. He has an incense and oil shop. And he said, okay, you want to buy 100 grams? I said, no, I only have 75 rupees. I said, it's a problem. He says, no problem. I said, no, it's not, yeah, it's not a problem for you because I'm giving you the money and I don't have the money. So he says, no problem. It's not a problem. He says, only problem is, he says, because it's only a problem for the master, not for the servant. He says, I am servant of Krishna. So for me, there's no problem with money. For Krishna, there's problem, not for me. So he said, only Krishna has. For him, it's a problem with the money. It's not my money, so it's not my problem. I said, okay.
So he gave me the 100 grams for 75.
Yeah. No, he gave me the 5 grams. I mean, 10 grams. Sorry, it was 10 grams for 100 rupees and 5 grams. But he, you know, at least he understood the philosophy. But you know, everyone's your guru here in Vrindavan. In India especially. But actually, he had philosophy right. I was wrong. I was thinking it's my money. And he was thinking, oh, it's Krishna's money. But anyway. So, yes, it's not a problem for the devotee. Because he's not thinking it's his body and his money and his house and his all these things. It's Krishna's. So it's Krishna's problem. And if we think it's our problem, then that means we're trying to control. We're trying to think it's ours. Not our problem. So, yes. Verse 25, because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, Supersoul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. So, misconception. Again, after death, there is nothing. When the body is annihilated, living being is annihilated. And I was every time I read this verse, I was thinking, oh, there must be something in the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma's creation, there's 5 misconceptions, but I always forgot to look it up. Does anybody remember one of these misconceptions is Antatamishra, after death there is nothing? Mahamoha, Moha, Mahamoha, Antatamishram, Tamishram. Okay, which one is it?
Raga-dvesha.
Okay, after death there is nothing. Is that one of them, or?
Last one.
Yeah.
Last one?
Anda-tamisham. Okay. This is third canto, first creation of Lord Brahma, I think. Wasn't it the first creation?
3:20:18.
Canto 3. Every time I would read this verse, I think, okay, I have to look that up. And every time I would forget. So, thank you. 3:20:18. And it's the last one, Anda-tamisram. After death, there is nothing. It's one of the original 5 coverings which were created in the beginning by Lord Brahma to cover us. So we'll look at this purport, last paragraph, after the quote, about 4 lines down. The conditioned soul, being envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may accuse him, saying, Krishna is bad, Krishna is a thief, and so on. But Krishna, being kind to all living entities, does not consider such accusations. Instead, he takes account of the conditioned soul's chanting of Krishna, Krishna, so many times. Isn't that wonderful? So people, they call Krishna names, and he says, oh, he said Krishna. He said Krishna. Yeah, actually, that reminds me of a story. I told it in this class before, but some of you probably didn't hear it. There was a man who was worshipping Krishna, and he was worshipping him for something material. And he wasn't getting it, so he said, okay, I'm not going to worship Krishna anymore. I'm going to go worship Durga. So he started worshipping Durga. And he was offering incense to Durga, but the incense was going to Krishna deity instead of Durga. So he went to the Krishna deity and he put cotton in Krishna's nose so he wouldn't smell the incense. And then in a dream, Krishna came to him and said, oh, thank you so much for your worship of me. He said, most people, they ignore me, but you have understood I am a person because you have put cotton in my nose. You're worshiping. At least he had the personal conception of Krishna. Anyway, that's a story. But yes, it's worst if you're an impersonalist. At least they're not impersonal. They think, okay, Krishna is bad. That means they're thinking about Krishna in his form. Now, here's a very merciful statement by Prabhupada in this purport. I couldn't believe it when I read it. People, demons who chant Krishna's name by blasphemy. Listen to this sentence. He sometimes punishes such demons for one life by putting them in a lower species. But then, when they have stopped accusing him, they are liberated in the next life because of chanting Krishna's name constantly. Can you believe that? A demon. It's in the purport.
Three quarters of the way down.
It's right in the purport, and it's quite amazing sentence there. Of course, you have to be a special demon to get that, but right there in the purport, Prabhupada says, I'll read it again, he sometimes punishes such demons for one life by putting them in a lower species, but then when they have stopped accusing him, they are liberated in the next life because of chanting Krishna's name constantly. Prabhupada says, blaspheming the Supreme Lord or his devotee is not at all good for the conditioned soul, but Krishna, being very kind, punishes the conditioned soul in one life for such sinful activities, then takes him back home, back to Godhead. Amazing. That's the purport. In Vrindavan especially, Prabhupada would say that if you live in Vrindavan and you commit Vaishnava Parad, Dhamma Parad, then next life you will be born as a dog, a hog, or a monkey in Vrindavan. So be very careful. And one of my godbrothers, Achyutananda, he was joking with Prabhupada one time. And he was saying to Prabhupada, oh, you know, it's so dirty here, you know, all the sewage and this and that. He says, why do they make it dirty? Why do they make Vrindavan so dirty, the people living here? He's complaining about the Brijbasis. Prabhupada said, yes, this life they are making it dirty, and next life they will come as hogs and they will clean it up. So, don't make Vrindavan dirty. Unless, of course, the hogs are pretty happy, but they're not that happy. Okay, Prabhupada, now here we see who these special devotees are. The vivid example for this is Vritrasura, who was formerly Chitraketu Maharaj, a great devotee. Because he derided Lord Shiva, the foremost of all devotees, he had to accept the body of a demon called Vritra. Then he was taken back to Godhead. Thus, when Krishna punishes a demon or conditioned soul, he stops that soul's habit of blaspheming him. When the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to Godhead. So, nectar of devotion gives a quality of Krishna, which explains the point how Krishna is impartial to his enemy. Is anybody give me a quality of Krishna? I think I did mention it in the first class. You might have picked it up. There is a quality of Krishna which shows, it's a nectar of devotion, one of the 64 qualities, that he is impartial. And this quality is quality number 28, called Equilibrium. This is, I think, 21st chapter of Nectar of Devotion. My dear Lord Krishna, this is a prayer to Krishna. My dear Lord Krishna, best of all the Kuru dynasty, you are so impartial that even if one of your sons is a culprit, you will chastise him. This is your business. Oh, sorry. You are so impartial, even if your enemy is qualified, you will reward him. And if one of your sons is a culprit, you will chastise him. This is your business because you are the supreme author of the universes. You have no partiality. If anyone finds any partiality in your characteristics, he is surely mistaken. So there was one newspaper article in Australia, Barija mentions it, and it came out criticizing Krishna. So many times in the article they were criticizing Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada said, no, this is very good. How many times did they write Krishna in this article? They said, okay, 17 times. He says, okay, how many people read this newspaper? And they quote, you know, so many millions. He said, okay, 17 times so many millions, people will see Krishna's name that many times. And they said, that's good. And, yes?
Actually, Bhakti Thakur, he classifies those verses under Ekantika, Ekantika and Ashriya Sadhana Bhakti.
Ah, Ekantika. Which verses?
26, 27, 28.
26, 27, 28. Who classifies them?
Bhaktivinoda
Thakur.
He classifies those three verses under Ekantiki, Namashraya,
Sadhana. Ekantiki, Namashraya, Sadhana, Bhakti. Means taking shelter of the name.
Yeah, full shelter.
Full shelter of the holy name.
Those three verses.
26, 27, and 28. Bhagavad Arka Marichimala. Okay, that's the 13th, no?
The 12th
way. 12th way. Okay. Namashraya, taking shelter of the holy name, 26, 27, and 28. Yeah, tomorrow we'll go into a discussion of 27 and 28. Very wonderful verses. Actually, all the verses that are coming up tomorrow. That's why we're only doing a few verses in the first class tomorrow, because they're very important verses, very special. As yesterday, Burijan Prabhu was commenting, they are the root of Raganuga Bhakti, these verses. How somehow or other be absorbed in Krishna, no matter how you do it. So, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 1, verses 194 to 195, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami are speaking to Lord Chaitanya. And they said, Jagaya Madhai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activity can be burned to ashes simply by a dim reflection of chanting of your holy name. So that goes with your Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Jagaya Madhai uttered your holy name by way of blaspheming you. Fortunately, that holy name became the cause of their deliverance. Jagaya Madhai chanted the name of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by way of blasphemy. But because they simply chanted his name, they immediately became free from the reactions of sinful activities. Thus, later, they were saved. So then again, in Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Lila 5, verse 155, so Damodar says to a Bengali poet, sometimes it so happens, one who wants to chastise Krishna utters the holy name, thus the holy name becomes the cause of his liberation. So I'm sure many devotees on Sankirtan have experienced that someone says the holy name by way of blasphemy, but later on they become devotees even sometimes. So now I have a purport for you from 4th Canto, 29th chapter, verse 14, about Vrindavan. Prabhupada says, sometimes we are often asked why we have made our center in Vrindavan. From the external point of view, it can be concluded Vrindavan has become degenerate due to sahajya activities. Yet from the spiritual point of view, Vrindavan is the only place where all these sinful persons can be rectified by means of taking birth in the forms of dogs, hogs, and monkeys. So all the sahajyas in Vrindavan, they get a chance. Prabhupada says, to become dogs, hogs, and monkeys. Yes. By living in Vrindavan as a dog, hog, or monkey, the living entity can be elevated to the spiritual platform in the next life. Yes, there was one such sadhu preaching in Vrindavan. I'm not going to mention any names, but he has a big ashram. And he's preaching in Nepal also. And he took a lot of our devotees away from us, and they became his devotees. And he's preaching that he is Bhagavan. And he's preaching all very high philosophy about Radharani and chants Radha's name, but of course he thinks he's Krishna, so he has a picture of him embracing Radharani in his ashram. I know. And he gives personal darshan to young ladies, which is not very good. So that was these are his activities. Even in Vrindavan. I heard last time he was banned from coming to Vrindavan by the Brijbasis. But in Nepal it's still going on. And so these things are happening. And the Mayavadis, I already told this story, one of our not devotees, but a congregational member started associating with the Mayavadi sannyasi here in Vrindavan, a Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam speaker, nonetheless. And so they were having illicit relations. So, but she had a little bit of knowledge from ISKCON. So she said to him, you know, this is not good. We should get married. And so the Mayavadi said to her, I can't get married, I'm a sannyasi. And he said, you know, all of I'm not the only one, everyone's like that in Vrindavan. That's what he said. So this is going on in Vrindavan. These things are going on. And they are speaking Bhagavatam. They're speaking Bhagavad Gita, and of course they don't believe that Krishna is just they don't believe in Krishna. They think that the highest is the Brahman merging or whatever, or their own sense gratification. And they think they're Krishna, so of course they can enjoy. Krishna is the enjoyer. So what to do? And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was once asked, even sometimes we find that in our own ashram, there are people who are not so sincere. And so somebody asked Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, why do you keep so many hypocritical people in your ashram? And what did he answer? He said, what better place is there for them to get better, to get rectified? Where else will they go to get rectified? It's the hospital, right? So Vrindavan's a big hospital. ISKCON's a big hospital, and it gets rectified here. Even akama savakama va mokshakama udharati tivrena bhakti yogena. Whether you have full of desires or you have no desires or you want liberation, just worship Krishna. And you'll become purified. So that's the theme of these verses, and especially tomorrow's verses, that somehow or other concentrate and focus on Krishna. Somehow or other think of Krishna. Verse 26. Therefore, tasmat, therefore. When the therefore comes, then that means it's a conclusion to all the verses we heard. The conditioned soul is in the bodily concept, this, that. Therefore, by enmity or by devotional service, by fear, by affection, or by lusty desires, by all of these, or any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or other concentrates his mind upon the Lord, the result is the same. For the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. So he doesn't see the bad, he only takes the good. That is Krishna. So, should we all become enemies of Krishna? Sounds a lot easier. You just have to... No, we should not. We should not do that. Because Prabhupada says in the purport, why not? From this verse, one should not conclude that because Krishna is unaffected by favorable prayers or unfavorable blasphemy, one should therefore blaspheme the Supreme Lord. It's all one. It's all the same. He's not hearing my prayers. He doesn't care. No. This is not the regulative principle. Bhakti yoga means anukulyena krishnanushilanam. One should serve Krishna very favorably. That is the real injunction. So we have that. And that is surrender. Two symptoms of surrender. Anukulyasya, sankalpa, pratikulyasya, varjanam. You accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable. Paragraph 2, 5 lines down. From the very beginning of their lives, these are the gopis. Oh no, not the gopis. This is the demons, sorry. From the very beginning of their lives, they thought of Lord Krishna as an enemy. And even though blaspheming Lord Krishna, they chanted the holy name of Krishna constantly, along with their inimical thoughts. Thus they were purified because of chanting the holy name of Krishna. It is to be understood that even a blasphemer can be freed from sinful activities by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Certainly, therefore, freedom is assured for a devotee who is always favorable to the service of the Lord. This will be clear from the following verse. By rapt attention fixed upon Krishna, one is purified. Thus one is delivered from material life. Paragraph 3. Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura has very nicely explained the word bhayena, which means by fear. When the gopis went to Krishna in the dead of night, they certainly feared chastisement by their relatives, their husbands, brothers, and fathers. But nonetheless, not caring for their relatives, they went to Krishna. There was certainly fear, but this fear could not check their devotional service to Krishna. Paragraph 5. The purpose of this verse is to emphasize even the enemy of the Lord can be delivered, not to speak of his friend. Śrīla Madhvacārya also says in many ways that one should not blaspheme Lord Vishnu through one's mind, words, or actions, for a blasphemer will go to hellish life along with his four fathers. So that is for us. We should not blaspheme Krishna. Now we'll go to the end of the purport, last paragraph. As for Hiranyakashipu, let's see, it's a long purport. Although he was extremely inimical toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he always thought of his son, who was a great devotee. Therefore, by the grace of his son, Prahlad Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu was also delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Anuko Yena. So my question is, who are the demons that are killed by Krishna now? Any demons to be killed? Yeah. Oh, our own false ego. Yes, Lord Chaitanya came to kill the demoniac mentality. Very good answer. The biggest demon is our own. We're imprisoned. Actually, I was reading a purport where Prabhupada says, we are imprisoned. Our imprisonment is the false ego. That is our prison. We've made our own prison, and it's false ego. And so to get out of it, first thing, get in the mode of goodness. And second thing is to concentrate, somehow or other, concentrate on Krishna. Think of Krishna. Any other demons that have to be killed now? I have something here from Krishna Katamrita about Putana, which is all about the demons of the present age. And interestingly enough, it's organized religion is one of the demons of the modern age. And this is Putana, because Putana, she came in the form of a mother. So mother is like a guru for the child. She came disguised. She came disguised as a mother. Or some people come disguised as gurus in this age. But the real purpose is to kill the disciple.
This is from Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati.
Yeah, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Putana, this one. Yeah, not in his thing on Putana. The quotation I gave previously was that why you have so many hypocritical people, and that, yeah, there is an article about who should live in the mat. Yeah. That's another.
I thought that I haven't read this, but I've heard talking that he made that comment, and that even the Gaudiya Math that, you know,
yeah.
Like,
I'm not sure.
Materialistic kind of people.
Oh, that's true, but I don't know about the Putanas. Putana is something very heavy. False gurus. That's the first demon which was slain by Krishna. And in our spiritual life, it's the first demon that we have to...
Is it false guru or organized religion?
Yeah, well, both. One of the false gurus is organized religion. One of them. And here, Bhaktisiddhanta says that this Putana... We'll see that. Putana is the slayer of all infants. The baby, when he or she comes out of the mother's womb, falls at once into the hands of the pseudo-teachers of religion. So this, the first thing that the baby gets is the pseudo-teachers of religion. These teachers are successful in forestalling, means stopping, the attempts of the good preceptor, whose help is never sought by the atheists of this world at the baptisms of their babies. So the archbishop of one of the CIS countries, he directly said that Krishna is a demon. He said that. He said about Krishna. And we see in the preaching in Poland also, one of the biggest oppositions from the church itself. So Prabhupada said, this is ensured by the arrangements of all established churches of the world. They have been successful only in supplying watchful putanas for effecting the spiritual destruction of persons from the moment of their birth with the cooperation of their worldly parents. So that was a very heavy comment by Bhaktisiddhanta. No human contrivance can prevent these putanas from obtaining possession of the pulpits. This is due to the general prevalence of atheistic disposition in the people of this world.
That's a Sajjana Toshini article?
This is from the Harmonist.
This is something to be read as an interfaith.
We wouldn't do that. Because, see, Prabhupada was more merciful than Bhaktisiddhanta. Bhaktisiddhanta was very heavy. Srila Prabhupada, he was so merciful. I can't believe how merciful he was. He was, when he was in Tehran, Iran, Muslim country, he was preaching there to the Muslims. And then he was sitting there one day and he was hearing, you know, the Muslims, they have these prayers 5 times a day. So when it was coming on the loudspeaker, they always put it on the loudspeaker. So Prabhupada said, "What is this? What is this?" And the devotee said, "Oh, they are saying the names of Allah." Prabhupada said, "Oh, this is very nice." And the devotee said, but shouldn't they chant Hare Krishna?" And Prabhupada said, "Do you want me to be sectarian?" So that's how Krishna is. He sees, you know, okay, they're chanting. Now Prabhupada was like that. Bhaktisiddhanta was hitting him over the head. Of course, at times, Prabhupada was, when he would preach to the Christians, he would say, "Why are you eating meat? Why don't you..." But his preaching platform was not to criticize Christ. He held Christ in great esteem, and Buddha and Muhammad. And he just would criticize the practices of the Christian. That, "Why aren't you following Christ? Christ says, 'Thou shalt not kill.' Why are you eating meat? Why are..." You know, so he would preach like that. But as far as he was concerned, he saw everyone equally, just like Super Soul. And Krishna also, he sees everyone equally. And who is very sincere, then he will accept the path of devotional service. Whatever religion he may be, he will become a devotee of Krishna.
In the term instruction, Srila Prabhupada explains that the governments that financially back up impersonal institutions to spread its atheism.
Yes. Actually, this Bhaktisiddhanta says, "The church that has the best chance of survival in this damned world is that of atheism under the convenient guise of theism." That's what he says. So Bhaktisiddhanta says, atheism under the guise. And you see, when you actually, how it's changing. When I was a child, I used to go to church. And I was very attracted by the beauty of the stained glass windows. And all these very nice, you know, very beautiful things. I would, during the lecture, I would trace the things on the ceiling, you know, in my mind, trace the designs. And then they got a new church, and I was all excited. They were going to get a new church. Okay, this is great. But in the new church, it became completely impersonal. They took out all the pictures, and they just had like benches. And but when I saw it, I was so disappointed. I said, "Whoa, where's God?" You know, they've taken out all the beauty. They've taken out all the attractiveness. And in the new church, there was a basketball court stadium. So we were teenagers. So we used to go and play basketball on our weekends in the stadium, boys and girls together. That was our, you know, Sunday. We go to church, and then after church, you go and play basketball and volleyball. And you see it. Somebody told me, "Oh yeah, my mother-in-law's church, it was universalist, so they had just like a picture of bamboo rods or something. And that's all there was." And it's just like, where is God? Where is God gone? It's become very impersonal. They don't even, many of them don't even believe in the personal form of the Lord. Yeah.
Parallels the slaying of different demons to different
anarthas.
Putana is mentioned.
Yes, Putana is there.
Organized religion.
Yes. So Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta says, the churches have always proved to be the staunchest upholders of the grossest form of worldliness, from which even the worst of criminals are found to recoil. It's so like with a preaching with a club. Then the end of it is, but as soon as theistic disposition makes its appearance in the pure consciousness of the awakened soul, the putanas are decisively silenced at the very earliest stages of their encounter with newborn Krishna. The would-be slayer is herself slain. So Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. Prabhupada was there just slaying all the Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, no matter what form they appeared in. This is the reward of the negative services the putanas unwittingly rendered to the cause of theism by strangling all hypocritical demonstrations against their own hypocrisy. So the putanas are doing good because they are strangling all criticism against the church. So that's helpful for us also, criticism. But then they are silenced when the real religion comes. When the real religion makes its appearance, then they are silenced. But Putana does not at all like to receive her reward in the only form that involves the total destruction of her wrong personality. King Kamsa also does not like to lose the services of the most trusted of his agents. The effective silencing of the whole race of pseudo-teachers of religion is the first clear indication of the appearance of the Absolute on the mundane plane. The bona fide teacher of the Absolute heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. So Srila Prabhupada, he preached with a club. When Prabhupada was leaving his body and he was very sick, he said, he was begging forgiveness for his offense. He said, I was preaching with a club in one hand and the Bhagavatam in the other. So that was Srila Prabhupada. But we cannot imitate Prabhupada. So that's the first thing. We cannot go and say, as he says, an interfaith. But here we speak the truth because we are all trying to know what is the truth. But Prabhupada's mood was not so heavy. Prabhupada was very, very merciful to everyone. And there was one nun who came to see Srila Prabhupada. You know a nun? She is a Catholic. She's a woman, like a sannyasi woman. They take celibacy their whole life. So this nun came to see Srila Prabhupada. And they were having a nice conversation, and she had her rosary, which is like our japa mala. And Prabhupada said, what prayer are you saying? And she said, I'm saying, O Lord Jesus, please have mercy on me. And Srila Prabhupada said to her, yes, he will have mercy on you. So Prabhupada gave his blessing to that nun who was chanting Jesus' name. Well, Prabhupada was like that. He saw it, but sometimes like with a French cardinal, he was very, Danilo, he was so heavy.
He died 3 weeks after that.
Yeah, and this cardinal was found in a prostitute's house 3 weeks later, died in a prostitute's house. And he was arguing with Prabhupada, why not eat meat? You know, Prabhupada was saying, you're just like a tiger. And he was giving all these arguments. No, but, and his conversation with Prabhupada. So just see. See, these are the people who are the leaders of the religion. Cardinal is like second to the Pope, right? Cardinal is very, very high in the church. If that's the behavior of the... Anyway, I don't want to speak about these things, but these things are happening. Prabhupada, he said there is a hospital just for alcoholic priests in America. Because when you give your communion, then you have to drink wine. And so they have to drink a lot of wine because they're giving it to everyone. Yeah, when I was in church, and you take that when your first vow, some kind like initiation, you take your first vows and you drink wine and something. It's, anyway, that's how it has come down, how it has become perverted in the present age, how the religion has become. That's what I understood, and I was serious about it. But when I was 13, then I understood that it's not what they say. I mean, I believed in the Bible, I believe in Christ, and I said, this is very nice, these things are nice, what he's teaching. But when I would go to the church and I would look at the people, and I would say, these people, they don't believe it, because they're not following it. So how can I believe it if they don't believe it? They're teaching it, and they say they're Christians, But they don't do it. They don't follow it. So why should I believe? So I lost my faith when I saw how the people were not following the religion. And although I saw, and then when I came to Krishna consciousness, I saw, yes, it's the same. Love, love God. The first commandment is love the Lord above all. So that was, you could see, if you're looking for real religion, then you'll find it, even if you're from another religion, from another faith. And it's really like this last, we were in Govardhan recently with many, many devotees from all over the world. And it was so nice because we were, in the beginning we had to go there. I was there a day ahead and we were setting up the altar. We're putting up decorations and everything. And my two best helpers, one was from Iran and the other was from Israel. And these two countries are not at all friendly. But you see, on the platform of real religion, all the material distinctions are finished. These two girls, they were just there, one side, one was holding one side of Prabhupada's Vyasasana, and the other one was holding the other side. So Israel and Iran were working together for Krishna. And it's the only way, otherwise they'll never come to an agreement. They'll never come to any agreement. They'll just kill each other, they'll fight to the death. But only in Krishna consciousness. And this was Prabhupada's actual, this was his merciful mood. He did not see, he did not make distinctions. He was not sectarian. He accepted the Muslims chanting the holy names as much as the devotees chanting Hare Krishna. That's acceptable to Prabhupada, it's acceptable to Krishna. But it's the sincerity that counts in this practice. Okay, so I think we'll stop here. Anybody else have any questions? Yes?
What's organized religion?
Organized religion means, according to this, you have an institution where you have certain practices. It's more like rituals. And you follow these rituals, and this will give you a good life, whatever, like that. Their goal is not necessarily, of course it can be good, like we're also organized religion in one sense. I mean, we're trying to be organized religion. Problem is, Prabhupada saw the problem. He said, therefore, you will show your love for me by how you cooperate, because everybody has his own idea here. We're not so organized in that sense. But, you know, they have a philosophy, they have a way to do things, they have a way to reach God, and it's rituals and a lot of rituals yes, what would you say?
I was thinking in this regard that Srila Prabhupada warned us not to become too overly institutionalized.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Don't make it a big institution.
Yeah, don't make it a big institution.
There's many drawbacks.
What's the danger?
Still, it's going to stifle the initiative.
Yes. It will stifle the initiative. And when early on in the movement, in America, there was a discussion that we had all these new temples coming up. And somebody came up with a bright idea. I think it was Karandar. Yeah, okay, we'll centralize all the temples and from one place they'll all get their money.
Yeah.
Prabhupada said no. Each temple has to survive on its own. They have to make their own money. They have to maintain themselves. This will stifle personal initiative. So that was Prabhupada's management. Yeah. It's voluntary. Unity is voluntary. Actually, there was one. Jagatruni told me one saying: If you want two people to get along, one of them has to be humble. And so humility. Humility is being stressed now, I believe. Actually, humility is very important. Yes.
People is sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a purpose. There's a good purpose that they try to engage low-class people in. Good, but they defeat their own purpose, because Prabhupada gave the example of, you know, they commit some sins, then they go to confession on Saturday, and then they do some little penance, and then they go back and do the sins again next week. So what's the benefit really?
I'm just thinking, if no religion will be there,
yeah.
So what will be the
answer? Yeah, if there's no religion, and that you have, of course, in the communist country there is no religion, so. But they controlled the people by the KGB and by fear. fear of the government. They don't allow them to go out and see what's going on in other countries. And so they control them by fear. But religion is the point is to control by love, actually. Yeah, there is, of course, yes, Adi Purush. Okay, in regard to? Last five verses, you mean?
Chapters
of?
First canto. Why Varnashrama is discussed.
Mean, oh, last five chapters of seventh canto. Okay, are we finished on this topic about organized religion? And we have another topic, yes? Jiva Dharma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that real religion is Vaishnava and other religions. Okay. So to the degree which they follow the Vaishnava religion, they are true religion. Yes. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes a very wonderful thing about if you go to a church, if you go to some place that's not your religion, how should you feel? How should you think?
At home.
You know that?
At home.
At home. Yes, you should feel that, okay, they are worshipping my Lord in another way. So let me see my Lord here. Let me see how Krishna is here in this place. A very wonderful vision of a devotee when he goes to somebody else's church. Yeah. I don't know why I brought this up. Anyway. Yes. Yeah, sometimes the blasphemer is sent to hell for many births. And other times there's mercy. That's what Yudhisthira said. Yes. How come Vena went to hell and Shishupala didn't? That will be answered, actually. It was answered in a commentary that the difference between Vena and Shishupala was that Vena did not see the form of Krishna. He was not concentrating on the form of Krishna. He was an atheist. He had no conception of God. Whereas Shishupala, he had a conception of Krishna. He was always meditating on Krishna. And that was the difference. And I think that will be, I think, in tomorrow's class, perhaps. I have a commentary about that. And what's the difference?
Well, incarnations of
Jaya and Vijaya. That's another point.
Should be a pretty good asset.
Right. Now, that's one point, but there's also the principle of the thing, which we're trying to understand. And that was that, what I just said, which I just forgot.
Well,
that, they focused on Krishna. Yeah, that's the principle. The principle is they focused on Krishna. And therefore, they got the mercy. The difference was a difference of attention. They focused on Krishna, and that will be tomorrow's verse. Vena, he didn't focus on Krishna. Yeah, kam, baya, dvesha, none of them. No form. Yeah, envy, anger, Shishupala. No, Vena didn't have conception. He was not focused. Yeah, Yashoda. Well, it's unfavorable bhakti. No, the reason is to please the Lord. The Lord wanted to fight. And some of the devotees, it was his desire to fight with them. So they said, okay, they went along with it. They go along with his desire. Yes, Dhamma Krishna. Right. Krishna was upset because she was more concerned with the milk than with him. So Krishna was upset with her. But it was not unfavorable. Emotional service. Okay. Who else? Siddhi? No, he wasn't absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, and therefore he went to hell. But he was delivered by incarnation, Prithu. Yes, Leela Madhuri. But that's playful. This is real fighting. In the material world, it's for real. I mean, it's not for real in one sense, but it's for real because they're like really demons, they really get into it. Whereas the cowherd boys, it's just, playing. I mean, they're not going
to
kill each other. Yeah, they got into it. They got into it. It's a demon. They were showing they were demons. What can I say? They weren't just playing the role. They became demons. Yeah, well, that was before, but when they were demons, they were just thinking, I got to kill Krishna.
Yeah,
Ravana and Kumbhakarna and the others. They got progressively promoted.
Yeah.
In their second birth, they became Brahmins. And then in the third birth, they were in Krishna's family.
They were
But they had demonic mentality.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cousins of Krishna.
They're brothers, cousins of Krishna.
Right. Okay, Adiprush, are you ready? We're ready?
This is regarding this question.
Okay. Yes, the Lord told Jayavijaya.
Just like Garuda, out of respect for the thunderbolt.
Just like Garuda, out of respect for the thunderbolt.
Dropped a portion of his wing.
Dropped a portion of his wing.
So you, out of
respect for brahminical power of curse, sent a portion of yourself as demons. Okay.
Staying here in your original form.
Staying here in your original form. So there you have it.
Pastime.
It is proved by descriptions of ominous pastimes.
Where Jaya and Vijaya are mentioned in the list of the guards in Vaikuntha.
Where Jaya and Vijaya are listed, mentioned as guards in the list of guards of Vaikuntha. Okay.
So told them
you go there. Yeah, we'll see that. Tomorrow I'll read some quotes from Third Canto also, which explain how the Lord actually approves of them going. Okay, what was your Varnasham quote?
So Sridhar Swami, he connects each canto with one of the 10 topics, same as Vishwanath Chakravarti.
Okay, Sridhar Swami connects each of the cantos with one of the 10 topics, as does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
As Vishwanath, but unlike
Jiva Goswami.
Jiva objects. He says that seventh canto describes Uti.
Seventh canto describes Uti, means cause, right?
Impetus. And he says that impetus is a desire.
Impetus is desire.
And this impetus is of two kinds.
Impetus is of two kinds.
Shubha and Ashubha.
Shubha and Ashubha.
Auspicious
and inauspicious.
And the cause of these two kinds of impetuses.
Cause of these two kinds of impetuses.
Is either mercy or anger of great souls.
Is either mercy or anger of great souls.
So here he has description of the inauspicious, impetus in the demon Hiranyakashipu.
Okay, there was an inauspicious impetus in the demon Hiranyakashipu.
Caused by the anger of the four Kumars. And auspicious in Prahlad.
Auspicious in Prahlad.
Who was directed towards bhakti thanks to the mercy of Narada.
So he was directed to pure bhakti by the mercy of Narada.
So therefore he says, intelligent people should endeavor for the mercy of the great souls.
Therefore, intelligent people should endeavor for the mercy of the great souls.
And
Uti, can you believe it? No, we should put it up there in our themes.
And there
Uti.
Spell it.
Huh?
Uti.
And therefore, the good desires.
Therefore, the good desires
are directed into karma performed with pure mind.
Are directed into karma from the pure mind. Is that what you said?
Perform with a pure mind.
Perform with a pure mind.
Actions with a pure mind. So that's why he says the last five chapters describe dharma.
So that's why the last five chapters describe dharma.
Or what is it? Dharmic activity.
What is dharmic activity? Okay, because it's uti. What is the impetus? So this Nishinga Lila is uti, according to Sridhar Swami. And then Varnasham will continue that in showing what is the impetus for dharmic activity.
How to act in a
dharmic way.
But the ultimate idea of taking up devotional service.
Yes, ultimately taking up devotional service.
To attract the mercy of the great souls.
Okay. As time, and we can connect it to what we just heard, time favors Sattvagun.
Because it is the airport.
Yeah, so Sattvagun. How to be in... Now, we may think, okay, time favors Sattvagun, so how do I do it? How should I act in Sattvagun? So then the Varnashram chapters will explain that.
And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he basically concurs, but he says that three kinds of bhakti are described.
Three kinds of bhakti, okay.
He says there's
Kevala bhakti.
Then there is bhakti mixed with...
Mixed bhakti with gyan.
And then there is jnana mixed with bhakti.
And jnana mixed with bhakti. Just chant Hare Krishna and don't worry about it all. But yes.
There it says it describes three kinds of bhaktas.
And three kinds of bhaktas.
Or premi bhakta.
Premi?
Yeah, prema bhakta.
Prema bhakta.
And santra bhakta.
Shanka Bhakta.
Shanta.
Shanta. Shanta Bhakta.
Mukta.
Mukta.
One is free.
Mukta Bhakta. Okay. All right. Marianja Puri. So the question is, the statement is, we are unable
to understand the motivations
to understand the motivations
that prompt
the actions of the Lord.
Do we agree with that or disagree?
Okay, do you agree or you disagree that we are unable to understand the motivations which prompt the actions of the Lord?
I think we should spend a little time on that.
Okay. Is that a difficult question? Do we agree? Okay, who agrees that we are unable to understand the motivations which prompt the activities of the Lord? The actions of the Lord. Who agrees that we are unable to...
It's a reference to verse 25.
Verse 25, okay.
It's an interesting question.
Yeah. These are Virgin's questions. You should ask him. But anyway, we'll discuss it. He has no false conception of I and mine. Oh, I see. He feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed. Impossible for him. When he accepts the prayers, it is for their good. Okay. He is affected neither by prayers or by blasphemy. I would think that's the key. You know, so okay, he's not affected by prayers or blasphemy, so then, you know, why not just blaspheme? So, okay, we are unable to understand. So you disagree, you understand. You are able to understand.
Not completely, but we can fathom. Well, I wrote. That's why I'm a little uncertain. I wanted to check with you.
Yeah.
Of course, we cannot fathom the Lord's lila, but according to 25, we can see that sometimes the Lord, being very kind, punishes the nitya bada, the conditioned soul, in one life for his path, for his sin, like, for instance, being envious of the Lord and deriding his name, Krishna, Krishna. Yet after one life of reactions, when they have stopped accusing him, they're liberated because of changing Hare Krishna consent.
Yeah, so I think this question can have many answers. There's not just one answer to this question. I think actually you could agree or disagree, according to how I see it. I won't make it a test question, because there's no right. And then whatever you write, it's correct, you know. And so, thanks. So what do you, does anybody disagree? You agree.
You disagree.
Does anybody agree that, yes, Janamashtami. Depends on the level of Krishna conscious evolution. Yes. 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 Yeah, Mavan Manitajika. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's a complete confusion.
Yes, exactly. And Hiranyakashipu wants to do that. We'll see in chapter 2. He wants to get Brahma's position so he can be God, in a sense. And what's the first thing he's going to do? Reverse the results of pious and impious activities. Yes, if one is self-realized, then the Lord is revealed. So he can understand.
This is what Prabhupada, that was his source of empowerment.
You agree with Madhavendra, it sounds like, to me.
Well, that is. You know.
Yeah, okay. Like a first-class devotee, he can understand.
If we put ourselves in, in the position of the
Mahabhagavat can understand. But even Bhishma, he was a Mahabhagavat, and he said, I don't understand. Even Brahma said, I don't understand.
But then there's a whole yoga maya.
Bhishma said, I don't understand the plan of the Lord, how these Pandavas are suffering so much.
Bhishma said,
nobody can understand. Okay, Bhishma said, nobody can understand. Madhavendra Puri.
I wanted to check with you.
You wanted to check? Okay. All right, so it's good to agree with his statement that we are unable to understand. Yes.
I'm sorry, he said no human being.
No human being. Okay. Demigods. But there was something in some purport that the demigods cannot understand.
And then he said that even Kavis, great philosophers, are bewildered.
Even the great...
Muyanti Yatsuraya.
The demigods are bewildered. But there was something in some class, I'm just remembering, I don't know if it was a Bhagavatam class, where it said that the demigods, they could not understand how the Lord was entering people's bodies. Anyway, I don't remember that class. It just came in my head. Yes, Dhamma Krishna.
I remember, even Bhagavatam sometimes was confused about Krishna.
What's that?
Even from Balaram, he was confused.
Balaram was confused.
Since other forms get confused.
Yes. Yeah, actually, that was today's class, Bhagavatam class. He read some quote where he said the demigods, they cannot understand a devotee's...
And there was one devotee arguing with
that. And one devotee was arguing.
Anupama Krishna didn't agree.
Yeah, he didn't agree. And there was some quote, that was a quote in class today. Yeah, the demigods do not understand.
But right. Then you have Srila Prabhupada giving analysis of different sociological phenomena.
Yes. Yes, Prabhupada would analyze. Well, Prabhupada understood a lot. And I would agree that to the extent, but even sometimes the Mahajans are bewildered. Bhishma got bewildered. And yes, completely. Okay. In the question, the key word is completely. Virijan's very tricky.
It's not there.
It's not there. Okay. Completely. Yes. Beyond scripture. Yeah, it's, you cannot... Okay, so bhakti is beyond human reasoning. Srila Prabhupada was like that too. I remember he would lecture for us, you know, on Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and I would just stare, we would all stare at him, and I would try to figure him out. And I just, with my intellect, you know, just, how is he here? How is he sitting here? Because he looked here, but also at the same time not here. It looked like a projection from another dimension. That's exactly what it looked like, what he looked like. Just like he was projected there, like he was in front of my eyes, but somehow he wasn't like there like we were there. And I try to figure it out every time. But I couldn't figure it out.
That was the reality. That's reality.
Yeah, it's reality, but you can't figure it out with your intelligence, only if some devotion and some service, which I lacked, so I didn't figure. You need to see with the eyes of devotion. And now when we look at the videos of Prabhupada, then we feel, I have that same feeling trying to figure him out, but then more now it's in separation, so you feel more of the emotions. And at that time he was with us, and it was kind of a curiosity in one sense for me, because that's my nature. Okay, any yes?
From the second class today, the lesson seems to be that we have to practice sadhana with some personal involvement.
Practice sadhana with personal involvement, yes. That's a good lesson.
What is the lesson from the first?
Today's class, the lesson is that we have to practice sadhana with some personal involvement. That's very
second,
nice.
It's the second class. But
I mean this class.
Yeah.
And the first class, well, you get in the mode of goodness, I would say. So you need to get into practice in the mode of goodness. That would be the conclusion, it would seem, of that. That he favors those in the mode of goodness. He reclaims those in the mode of goodness. And now in this, we're in sadhana. And we need to endeavor in our sadhana. Yeah, there's mode of goodness, then there's sadhana bhakti, and then tomorrow, somehow think of Krishna. It's like the reverse of the Gita verses in chapter 12. It's like the reverse. We're going up now. Bring up, tomorrow will be the ultimate. Always think of Krishna. Raghunath? Radhanath Swami. In the five last chapters. Yeah, Prahlad is ruling the whole universe. That's the end of, that's the tenth chapter.
And one of his duties to engage the population
in Varnashram. Okay, one of his duties was to engage the population in Varnashram. So he was showing, yes, okay, so then it's appropriate to hear the Varnashram after Prahlad Maharaj became the king of the universe. Yeah, actually he didn't become king of the universe, but king of the demons. And especially they need the Varnashram system. As Indra, he remained in his position. He gave back the heavenly planets, but he became king of the demons, the Daityas, sons of Diti. Okay, any last questions? Sridhar Maharaj. Uti. Impetus. Oh, I don't know.
Two ten one, the ten topics.
Oh, 10 topics.
2-10-1. No place.
It's just one of the topics. Yeah, it's not in... It's a fifth, but that doesn't mean it's a sequence. Doesn't mean
it's all scattered all over.
It's not a sequence.
Except for the tenth canto, Zashtrayam.
Okay, my understanding was that's what
the difference is, because that's what Jiva says.
Yeah.
And
Jiva says it's scattered.
Yeah. And
Shira Swami and Vishnu Chakravachakar say it's a sequence. It's a sequence. Hari's battery died, so he cannot give us the answer to this question.
Regarding 11, Siddhartha says it's mukti.
Oh, mukti, yeah.
Regarding 10, he says it's certainly ashraya. And
ashraya.
I don't have commentaries in 11 and 12.
Okay.
Mukti, so that means mukti comes twice?
Is mukti also in a previous canto?
Mukti comes twice then, because if you go from 1 to 10, you have 10 topics.
No, from 3.
Oh, you start at 3.
Oh, yeah.
Start at 3.
And they go pretty much in sequence.
And the first two ones are...
Nirodha Mukti?
So that is why Prabhupada, he untitled his canto, like, according to Nirodha. Yeah.
So he followed somebody.
He followed someone.
Yeah. Yes, Leo, last question.
No, I didn't, because he started from 1.
We're not finished.
So where did you get that from?
That's the question.
Even send an email to...
No, even Pradyumna doesn't know. Yes. No. Pradyumna is the person to ask, because he was there in the beginning doing all that work. Pradyumna, if you can contact him.
I like Mother Mohan's answer to that.
Oh, yeah. What did he say?
He said that this is very convenient for a book.
It's very convenient for a book. Okay.
That's for each volume.
Yeah.
Well, since all the topics are covered.
In all of them, yes.
It's not the one.
Yeah, it's just convenient for a book, yes. That's a good answer. Okay, last question.
Three types of bhaktas.
Actually, I'm sorry, it was not...
Kevala Bhakti.
He didn't say bhaktas, he said there are three stages. Mukta, Shanta Bhakta, and Premi Bhakta.
Premi. Mukta, Shanta, and Premi.
He didn't say Mukta Bhakta.
No, sorry. That's
yeah, because I was wondering, what is this Mukta Bhakta?
Yeah, he said three stages.
Okay.
So, and that's what's described according to him in this canon.
Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.